Welcome to Fronteras, a Changing America. I'm your host, Vanessa Dalbovich. International frequent travelers are all too familiar with lengthy lines at U.S. immigration counters when arriving from overseas. The Department of Homeland Security now has a program that will slash that wait time from as much as over an hour to less than a minute. It's called Global Entry. Fronteras correspondent Hernan Rosenberg reports.
Rob Barnett is a lawyer at a San Antonio firm that specializes in immigration visas for Mexican businessmen. He travels to Mexico at least once a month. He typically faces a long wait clearing immigration. Then he saw how Global Entry works and his jaw dropped.
I would be stuck in a very long line to get through immigration, and they breezed by, touched the screen, and were gone while I waited in line.
That was at the Houston International Airport. It's one of 25 across the country that participate in Global Entry, a little-known program rolled out by the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, on a test basis in 2008, but made a permanent program this year. International frequent flyers bypass immigration inspectors and check in at automatic kiosks, much like ATMs. It's like fast-track lanes at Mexican and Canadian land border crossings. So far, 300,000 people have enrolled in Global Entry.
This gives us a good demonstrated low-risk group of travelers, and then the government can redirect our resources to people we know less about.
That's John Wagner, in charge of Trusted Traveler Programs for Homeland Security. He says any U.S. citizen or resident, as well as people from Mexico and Canada, are eligible. Germany, the UK, Holland, and Qatar are also in the club. Other partner nations will also soon join, pending agreements. Applicants go through interviews and criminal background checks. Wagner explains the process at the airport.
When they come off the plane, they go right to the kiosk, so they do not get in line. The kiosk will read their passport. It will prompt them to put their four fingerprints onto a fingerprint reader. You'll do your customs declaration via the touchscreen. It will then run a series of background checks, and then it will print out a receipt. So the total time at the kiosk takes about 40 seconds, and then you'll proceed right out.
The most active Global Entry hubs so far are big airports like JFK, Houston, and Atlanta. Phoenix and Las Vegas are among the most recent additions. San Antonio also wants in.
We want a piece of the action. We want that market of international travelers to come to San Antonio.
Marco Barros is president and CEO of the San Antonio Tourism Council. He has led the charge to get Global Entry here. San Antonio International is not one of the country's largest, but it had a 33% increase in international passengers last year, primarily from Mexico. And it's now served by four Mexican airlines, up from one. City leaders argue it's all more than enough reason to have Global Entry here. Take Eduardo Bravo, chairman of the board of the 500-member Mexican Businessmen Association. He says many of his colleagues are eager to sign up.
They have to travel almost every week to Mexico. It's a big challenge. And if we have the Global Entry program here in San Antonio, it's very good for the city.
But Homeland Security isn't convinced yet. Program manager Wagner would only say that San Antonio is under consideration, as are various others. But Marco Barros of the Tourism Council thinks he can sweeten the deal to get Wagner to move more quickly.
There's ways that we can speed up the process. So instead of waiting to be airport number 11 on the standby list, we could move to one or two or three if we offer to pay for the kiosk.
They go for $25,000 apiece. Barros already has some potential investors lined up. In San Antonio, I'm Hernan Rosenberg.
The point of so-called self-deportation laws is to make a place so difficult for unauthorized immigrants that they leave or self-deport on their own. Arizona has passed several laws and initiatives in this vein over the last 10 years, but the data show that many unauthorized immigrants still have found a way to stay. From Phoenix, Devin Brown reports.
Senate Bill 1070 may be Arizona's most famous self-deportation bill, but it was not the first. Long before legislators came up with a law that would make it difficult to live in Arizona, they passed a law that made it difficult to work in Arizona. This was the 2007 Legal Arizona Workers Act. It was the first state law in the country that mandated that employers check workers' Social Security numbers against federal databases or risk fines. Immigrant electricians like Alfonso were told, "You've got 3 months to get a good Social Security number. Otherwise, you've got to get out of here."
And I tell him, "It's easy. Go to pick it up one Social Security. It's not easy."
It wasn't easy because Alfonso isn't authorized to be here, which is why he asked that we not use his last name. Alfonso actually ended up doing what the E-Verify legislators hoped. He left Arizona and moved to Texas. But all he found in Texas were more bosses who wanted a real Social Security number.
In Texas, it's very difficult, more than Arizona. In Arizona, you know what is the city, what is... In Texas, you don't know nothing.
So after 3 months, Alfonso came home. Basically, he couldn't get a formal job in either state, and the only people who would give him informal or cash jobs are the ones who know him. And the people who know him live in Arizona.
The boss say, oh, it's okay. I pay cash, you know? And when the people work, everybody pay cash.
Researchers at the Public Policy Institute of California, who studied the effects of Arizona's Legal Workers Act, found the law reduced the unauthorized population by about 17% in the year after the law passed. But it also left immigrants like Alfonso with essentially two loopholes: work as an independent contractor or start your own business. The latter option, according to researcher Magnus Lofstrom, was hugely popular.
It's roughly a doubling of the self-employment rate among this population in Arizona. It goes from about 8% to 16%.
Alfonso actually does both. He's an independent contractor handyman for a property management company, and he also has his own company for electrician work. It's a complicated situation for Alfonso because he makes less money now, but he also no longer pays taxes like he used to with the Social Security number he'd made up.
1996 to 2010, I paid taxes. Only last year, this one, I don't have W-2.
Even before legislators made it so complicated for unauthorized immigrants to work here, voters made it complicated for them to study here when they passed Proposition 300 in 2006. The proposition required all state colleges, including community colleges, to charge undocumented students non-resident tuition. For a student like Francisco Duran, this meant tuition went up by about 300%.
They were indirectly telling us, you know, don't go to school. Basically, because, I mean, $1,000 for one class is too much.
At this point, Duran would pay out-of-state tuition anywhere, so self-deporting wouldn't help. Plus, he loves Arizona and said that whatever laws the legislators pass, there will always be a workaround. The workaround in this case is the Navajo Technical College. NTC is based in Crown Point, New Mexico, and because it's chartered through the Navajo Nation, its pay structure is based on tribal membership, not state residency. So Prop 300 doesn't apply. Navajo students pay $45 a credit, and everyone else, including undocumented students, pays $90 a credit, which is essentially what community college credits used to cost undocumented students before the proposition ruled them non-residents. Most of NTC's Phoenix students, a little less than 200, aren't in the U.S. legally. Cesar Valdez is one of them, and he's so excited about the college that he makes presentations at high schools to convince other immigrant students to sign up.
One of the girls actually started crying because she was a senior, and she was like, I'm so glad you came, because up to this day, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was thinking about moving to California, New Mexico, or even going back to Mexico. And she's like, I didn't know that this was happening.
And with that, Valdez did exactly what the legislators behind the slew of self-deportation bills most fear. He gave another undocumented immigrant a reason to stay. In Phoenix, I'm Devin Brown.
The American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico works to maintain and advance the cause of civil liberties across the state. The ACLU Regional Center for Border Rights in Las Cruces focuses on immigrant rights and addresses civil and human rights violations that stem from border-related immigration policies. The organization's director, Vicky Galbeca, joins us now in the studio to talk about their work and a national civil rights campaign. Tell me about the ACLU of New Mexico. What is the mission of the organization?
The Regional Center for Border Rights is sort of the southern office of the ACLU of New Mexico. Our main headquarters are up in Albuquerque. And fundamentally, I would say that 90% of our work here focuses on the mission of addressing civil and human rights violations that stem from border enforcement and immigration policy. So while we do address general civil rights issues, our main focus for the office in Las Cruces is to focus on the civil and human rights violations that happen.
So I guess that kind of leads into my next question is, what particular issues does this branch face that maybe other ACLU areas don't?
Well, again, I guess our major focus is on immigrant rights. As you probably know, most civil rights in the Bill of Rights do apply to everyone, regardless of immigration status. So, for example, freedom of speech, right to remain silent, the right to be protected from illegal search and seizure, due process, all those sort of general civil rights issues affect all of us, regardless of immigration status. So we do sort of focus on that. Our office here in Las Cruces has several initiatives that we work on, but we have three focus areas in general. The first one is, and these are not in any kind of hierarchy, okay. But one of the area focuses is Border Patrol, while national security is important, we work, endeavor to ensure that whenever Border Patrol agents do commit human civil rights abuses against the people that they're detaining, that they are held accountable for that. No one's above the law. And so we just want to make sure that that immigrants in detention are held in humane, constitutionally guaranteed conditions of confinement, that they receive, for example, appropriate medical care, that they get the right forms explained to them in the language of origin, et cetera, things like that, due process issues. Also, any kind of excessive use of force against immigrants in detention. That's something that, in fact, I don't know if you recently saw that PBS Need to Know program that aired last Friday. Mm-hmm. We were involved with some of that, publicizing that story. So that's one focus area. The other one, just in general local law enforcement, when they also engage in civil rights and human rights abuses, we're concerned about that. ACLU New Mexico does not believe, or ACLU in general does not believe, that it's the job of local police to enforce federal immigration law. So we're through public education and advocacy, we try to make sure that that police and sheriffs don't ask about immigration status during a routine traffic stop. That is primarily because it's a community safety issue. It's a public safety issue. When community members and victims and witnesses of crime are afraid of calling police to report crime, then I think public safety for everyone is undermined. So we want to ensure that community trust exists, actually, to help local police officers to do a better job and fulfill their oath to public service and to protect the community.
So what kinds of outreach or public education programs or services do you offer?
So we work a lot with coalitions, with local coalitions that also provide services to immigrants. But we also provide Know Your Rights training to anyone in the community. We go often out to the communities in Doñana County and present just sort of a refresher to community members about what their rights are, what their basic rights are. And how to protect themselves from when encountering a local law enforcement official who's not, or even a federal law enforcement official who's not, who's not engaging in the appropriate protocol as far as police work is concerned. So that we do have a very Know Your Rights training program, and we're always more than happy to go out and provide those trainings anywhere that people feel that there's a need for that information. We also do a lot of coalition work. We document cases of any kind of abuse that we come across. We document to see if there's any kind of trends or if there's any kind of advocacy that we can do to right those trends.
So kind of along those same lines, how involved do you get in immigration law and reform? Like, how far can you go until there's, it's out of your hands?
Right. So immigration reform is actually I think that everybody, no matter where you are on the fence, I think everybody pretty much agrees that there's a huge need for reforming the immigration system. It hasn't been updated in decades. There's a lot of, there's just bad policy that's resulting in a lot of, particularly in the border region. We're seeing a lot of family separations, and just the fabric of the border communities is being torn apart by these immigration policies that just don't make sense anymore. So whenever we actually have formed coalitions, and we have gone to Washington, D.C. and met with White House staff members and congressional members as well as top officials at the Department of Homeland Security to see if there's anything that can be done to make these policies more humane and more reasonable for so that these civil and human rights violations aren't occurring anymore, and also to minimize the effects of family separation.
So the national campaign Estamos Unidos was in Las Cruces, I believe it was yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes, it was on Thursday.
So tell me about this campaign.
So this is a really new campaign that the national ACLU is organizing, and it's called Mi ACLU. And in Spanish, that's how people know the ACLU. They call it La ACLU, which is the ACLU. That's how you would say it in Spanish, the four letters. And this is actually the starting point for this was actually the SB 1070 hearings that happened this week in the Supreme Court. We sort of decided that it was important to do this very large outreach to the Hispanic and Latino community. Now, I think everyone needs to know and be reminded of their constitutional rights. We just feel that there's a great need to get out there and remind the Latinos and Hispanic about this. So this is a very deliberate outreach to the Latino-Hispanic community. They've developed, the national organizations of ACLU have developed a website in Spanish that's called Mi ACLU, and you can find it at miaclu.org. And it talks about what we'll be doing. It will be tracking SB 1070 cases and also other copycat laws that have passed in other states in the United States, as well as any ones that are proposed, although I think very few states are proposing those because they've been finding that the economic, it has some negative economic consequences to the state. So I think a lot of states are being discouraged from passing similar laws. So the main objective is to really do this outreach to the Latino Hispanic community and remind people what their constitutional rights are.
So what areas does it cover? How many states and how long will this campaign be going?
So it got kicked off April 22nd, and it'll probably keep going. It's expected that the Supreme Court will make a decision probably towards the end of June. This is when the ruling will happen. I'm an eternal optimist. However, I don't know if you heard any part of the hearing at all, but I think that we're not really sure it's going to be a very positive outcome. It's not going to be a very positive ruling. So we just want to ensure that people just know that no matter what state law gets passed, or no matter what whatever Supreme Court decision there is, our basic civil rights are still not affected by that. We still, you know, nothing trumps our constitutional rights, U.S., our federal constitutional rights. So I think that's part of one of the biggest reasons why we're continuing this campaign. And it will be probably going on for a very long time indefinitely.
So I imagine with this kind of campaign then, and the work that the ACLU does, that you hear many stories and they're collected and they're shared, you know, from the people that are affected by these kinds of policies. So what are you hearing from people right now?
I think that, you know, we have seen an increase in local law enforcement who erroneously believe that it is their responsibility to ask about immigration status. I think we've seen an increase in the misconception of where people conflate crime with immigration, and they're really two very separate things. And so what we're hearing from a lot of community members is basically that they feel that they're being racially profiled, that they've lost some rights. Many along the border, there are many families who are experiencing family separation in cases where parents are being torn away from their children, brothers and sisters are being torn away from each other, and it's all because of immigration laws that need to be updated. And it's really a lot of suffering that we're seeing in a lot of communities along the border.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to thank you for having me here to talk about this. I would encourage people to go to the miaclu.org website. To go to the New Mexico ACLU website, which is aclu-nm.org. And, you know, we encourage them to get involved in advocating for the communities and making a more fair and just society along the border. I think that we have been very bicultural along the border, and we're starting to see that being affected. We're seeing our economy along the border affected by immigration and border enforcement policy. And I think that truly by building a community along the border, we can certainly push for better policy.
Vicky, thank you so much for coming into Fronteras today.
Thank you.
I'm Vanessa Dalbovich. Thank you for tuning into Fronteras, a Changing America.